Welcome to the Excellence in Church Administration podcast, informing, encouraging, and supporting your church. Your hosts are Michael Martin and Dan Busby from ECFA.
Hi, it's time for another Excellence in Church Administration podcast by ECFA. This is Michael Martin, and I'm joined again today by Dan Busby, my podcast co-host and president of ECFA.
And thanks, everyone, for joining us.
That's right. We know everyone's time is precious, so we're extremely grateful that you've chosen to spend a few minutes with us. We have a very important topic today that I'm confident will be well worth your time, the five commandments of giver intent. Honoring giver expectation and intent is critical as we build cultures of financial integrity and trust in our churches. And giver-restricted gifts is definitely one of the hottest topics we tackle on a regular basis at ECFA because it's something that all churches across America constantly face. And Dan, I know you have a real passion for this area. You've literally written volumes on this subject over the years, from articles to the books Donor Restricted Gifts and Donor Restricted Gifts Simplified to the most recent Guide to Charitable Giving for Churches and Ministries. Can you tell us a little bit about why this topic is so important to you and to the leaders out there who are listening to the podcast?
Absolutely. In just a moment, I'll share one of my favorite stories that helps put this all into perspective. But I guess I would start out by acknowledging the obvious and a point you already made, Michael. One reason I'm so passionate about this topic is that the stakes are very high when it comes to how churches and other nonprofits honor giver expectations and intent. This is coupled by the fact that it's one of those areas where nearly every church has to deal with this issue in one way or another. If we had the privilege today of all sitting in one room, I would ask for a show of hands on how many churches have funds set up for receiving restricted, or often we use the term designated, purposes. And I'm positive almost 100% of the hands in the room would go up. So it's a very practical topic that applies to all of us, where legal, accounting, and ethical issues are all intertwined, not to mention the fact that how we handle gifts for restricted purposes is critical to building and maintaining trust with givers.
That's absolutely right, Dan. And we will get back to honoring giver intent and its relationship with trust later in the podcast. But first, you mentioned you had a story for us, right?
Yes, and it is one of my favorites. Here goes. Ray was sad to lose his wife, Colleen, after her struggle with cancer. At the time of Colleen's death, a local hospital was making initial plans to construct an additional facility. Ray and Colleen had modest resources, but their son, Troil, was very wealthy. Troil began to talk with the hospital about making a $500,000 gift. The hospital offered to name the complex after Colleen. Hospital leaders showed Troil mock-ups of the proposed building bearing Colleen's name. And so, after careful consideration, Troil made a gift of $500,000 to the hospital for a new facility. For the next couple of years, the hospital had continuing discussions with Troil about the naming rights for the new facility. Then, in year three, the hospital told Troil that the $500,000 would be used for other construction projects, not for the facility they had discussed. Soon thereafter, Troil sued the hospital. Troil's agreement with the hospital was oral, therefore the jury had to determine who was telling the truth. The case concluded with a jury awarding Troil the $500,000 gift back, plus the maximum in punitive damages, another $500,000. You know, one juror who clearly thought the hospital went back on its word said, "We wanted to show them not to do that anymore to anyone else." And the recipient of the gift was Integrus Canadian Valley Regional Hospital in Troil's hometown of Yukon, Oklahoma. But Troil is better known as Troil G. Garth Brooks. Ironically, the hospital is located on Garth Brooks Way. You know, Michael, this is a story about a major gift to a hospital, but it could have been a gift to a church just as well.
No, you're absolutely right. I think as churches, we have to be careful not to be tempted into thinking that this could never happen to us. It's not just high-profile country music singers and big hospitals that can run into problems with restricted gifts. You know, I was actually just reading an article recently about a church in Michigan that had about 100 members, you know, the typical church in America, that was sued over a restricted gift dispute. The plaintiff, who is a longtime chair of the church board of trustees, if you can imagine that, this longtime chair of the board sued the church, the pastor, and other leaders for allegedly redirecting $41,000 in donations. So we're not talking about the, you know, $500,000 cases, but still brought a lawsuit over $41,000 in donations to other purposes that the giver says were intended to be used for a fellowship hall. 2 years later, this case continues to drag on and cause distractions, and who knows what kind of division within the church. It's just very sad. So we could spend hours, I know, talking about these and other examples on covering the legal and accounting guidance, the technicalities in this area, but that's really not our purpose in today's podcast. So now that we've just briefly introduced the importance and the potential impact of this topic, we want to move into some really practical help and tips, which really is the focus of our time together. So Dan, I suppose a good place to start would be explaining or defining what we mean by the term restricted gift.
Yes, defining terms is always a good start. I like to put it this way. A specific purpose gift is one intended to support a purpose more specific than the general purpose or purposes of the church. All other gifts support the church's general purposes. Again, instead of a specific purpose gift, you may be accustomed to hearing the technical term restricted gift, or the more casual reference to designated gifts, but they share basically the same meaning and importance. When a giver intends for a church to use their gift for a specific purpose, unless there is some kind of action or agreement otherwise, the church is bound to honor the giver's intent after accepting the gift. It's like entering into a contract with the giver to fulfill these restrictions. Today, we see so many churches receiving restricted gifts because the restrictions can be a powerful giving incentive, but with that comes the great responsibility to honor giver intent. You know, at ECFA, we continue to see the trend toward more and more restricted gifts, especially among the growing base of millennial givers. So this is an issue that's not going away. And as illustrated in the Garth Brooks case and the church case you mentioned, Michael, we're also seeing a rise in lawsuits from donors who are willing to go to court when they believe their intentions have not been honored.
No, that's right. I think you're so right when it comes to those trends that we're seeing. And I really like that simple definition that you gave of restricted gifts. So it's good not to get too hung up on the legalese or even the accounting ease, and really just focus on whether the gift is more specific than the general purposes of the organization in determining whether there is that restriction in place that the organization is bound to follow. So Dan, in terms of practical helps and tips, we have here at ECFA what we like to call the five commandments of giver intent. With commandment number one being, thou shalt be very intentional in communicating giving opportunities so it's clear to potential givers whether general purpose or specific purpose gifts are sought. Can you expound for us on this first commandment?
Sure, I'll be glad to. I've observed across the years that an appeal for resources can be as crystal clear as a cloudless sky, as murky as a foggy night, or somewhere in between. And after reading or hearing an appeal by the church, a prospective giver should be able to readily understand how gifts will be used in response to the appeal. Unless there is clarity at the very beginning of the process of raising funds, from the initial idea stage on, it will be challenging to create a consistent thread of communication, documentation, and reporting.
That's so true, right? About intentionality and clear communication. Let's now tackle commandment number 2, thou shalt expend specific purpose gifts in consistency with the giver's intent. That really gets to the heart of the issue that we're talking about today. When we expend specific purpose gifts in any way that's inconsistent with giver intent, we run into some problems, right?
Definitely. If the church says it will spend a gift for a specific purpose, it should spend it for that specific purpose. It's just that simple. While there can be exceptions based on explanations provided to givers at the time of the gift or perhaps after the gift, the general rule is this: raise the funds for A, spend the funds for A. Raise the funds for B, spend the funds for B.
No, that's so true. I think that with that simple rule, we could call that the golden rule of this topic, right? How about let's tackle commandment number 3, which is thou shalt segregate the revenue and expenses relating to each type of specific purpose gift in the accounting records to document compliance with giver intent. So here in commandment number 3, we see the connection between keeping good financial records and maintaining trust by showing givers that we have been faithful in honoring their intent for a gift. Can you tell us more about that commandment, Dan?
Yes. In the church's accounting records, separate revenue and expense accounts should be established for each type of specific purpose gifts. Without this accounting treatment, the appropriate data will not be readily available for financial statement reporting purposes and for reporting to givers who provided the specific purpose gifts.
Perfect. Well, let's move now into the home stretch here with commandment number 4. Thou shalt give special attention when specific purpose gifts are insufficient to carry out giver intent, or when specific purpose gifts exceed the amount required to carry out giver intent. I can speak to this one in saying, as a practical matter, it's going to be very rare for the church to receive the exact amount of funds from givers for a restricted project. Almost inevitably, there will be some over and some underfunding. When major under or overfunding scenarios occur, unfortunately, this can sometimes create the perfect setup for a church to fall into the temptation of not honoring giver intent. In other words, if the funds are drastically short, or maybe they're drastically over budget, let's just use the gifts for some other purpose. Maybe that's the temptation. As we've learned, that would be tempting, but a huge mistake for the organization. Instead, we believe that churches should be proactive about over and underfunding scenarios by communicating clearly with the church's givers on what will happen should these situations arise. And now, we include more detailed guidance and sample communications on this topic in the restricted giving chapter of our booklet titled The Charitable Giving Guide for Giver-Restricted Gifts, and also our companion book, Dan, The Guide to Charitable Giving for Churches and Ministries.
Yes, excellent. And we're now down to our last commandment, commandment 5, thou shalt not use a policy or board decision as the basis to override giver intent. You know, Michael, this may be a little less familiar to folks than the other 4 commandments. Occasionally, churches accept specific purpose gifts, but they feel they have the authority to override giver intent based on a staff or board policy. A policy that has the effect of accepting restricted gifts and ignores restrictions is unethical. Let me say that again. It's simply unethical and could be the basis for a legal challenge by the giver, in my view. A church certainly has the authority to reject all specific purpose gifts. You may adopt a policy to accept only general purpose gifts. But if a giver is unaware of the policy and makes a specific purpose gift, the church should return the gift or ask the giver to change it to a general purpose gift. Sometimes, giver restrictions and the discretion and control organizations are required to exercise over funds by law are seen as competing ideas. However, they are complementary. It isn't either or, it's both and.
Right.
Let me share a slight variation of what I've mentioned, a variation that occurs too often in churches, in my view. A church provides offering envelopes, and on one side of the envelope, a giver can indicate a restriction or designation and the related amount. However, on the back of the envelope is a statement saying something like, the church can spend the money wherever it sees fit. So, on the one hand, givers are encouraged to restrict or designate funds, and on the other hand, they're told the restrictions or designations are meaningless. This is duplicitous at best, and a practice that should absolutely be avoided, in my opinion.
Not to mention pretty confusing.
Absolutely.
Well, Dan, thanks so much for closing us out with that example and the fifth commandment on giver intent. I think through this discussion, it's clear that trusted churches honor giver intent, period. In fact, this makes me think at ECFA, we can look back and see in our own history as a ministry that we were founded nearly four decades ago in part because of this whole issue of honoring giver intent. I know back then there were concerns about certain outliers in the nonprofit community in the late 70s saying in their appeals that they would use funds for one purpose and then were using them for another. And ECFA has been proud to take a stand on this issue and require all of our over 2,100 certified members now displaying the ECFA seal to be committed to honoring giver expectation and intent. It's really a sign of enhanced trust for donors. And you can learn more about this ECFA standard and what it means to be an ECFA member, of course, by visiting ecfa.church. We'll also hear more in just a few minutes from Tracy about some free resources that we're offering to help churches continue to demonstrate integrity in this area. But first, it's time for the Answers to Your Questions segment. Dan, can you get us started with some questions today?
Absolutely, Michael. For today's Q&A segment, we're going to cover just a few of our most popular restricted giving questions that we've received over the years. Here's the first. The question, to restrict a gift, is a giver required to provide a written restriction with the gift? And the answer is no. A writing is one way for a giver to restrict a gift, but certainly not the only way. A giver's restriction may be either expressed or implied from relevant facts and circumstances. If you remember in the Garth Brooks case, there was no writing, and the court upheld the agreement that was found to be only oral, no writing. Of course, we always recommend, especially for major restricted gifts, that there be some sort of evidence in writing to help avoid the potential for misunderstanding.
So here's another popular one that we get, Dan. The question is it ever appropriate for a church to refund a gift to a giver? In particular, what if restricted funds are involved? So the answer to this question is yes. A refund may be appropriate. In the context of restricted gifts, if a church holds restricted resources for which it has no use in the foreseeable future, and the church has not obtained a release of the restriction or the right to redirect the funds for another use, it may be appropriate to refund a gift to the giver in that situation.
I'll conclude here with one last question, another very popular one. The question is it appropriate for a church to internally borrow from restricted funds? Well, for starters, churches are legally required to spend restricted net assets in a timely manner to further the intent and purposes expressed by the giver. Therefore, loans from restricted net assets should be avoided. However, if a church does borrow restricted net assets, the church board should be apprised at a minimum, and the borrowing should be eliminated as soon as possible. Well, we're out of time on today's podcast for questions, but please email podcast@ecfa.org if there's a question you'd like for us to tackle in a future episode. Now we'll turn to Tracy from our church engagement team to hear more about ECFA's latest resources on modeling integrity with restricted gifts.
Hey, thanks for a great podcast today, guys. That was incredible. ECFA has some terrific resources to equip you with on today's topic. The first is a webinar on demand titled Getting It Right Every Time with Restricted Gifts. This fantastic webinar is available free to all ECFA member organizations as well as our Church Excel subscribers. We've received lots of terrific feedback on this webinar, including one listener who said, I am now better equipped to teach our leadership and board members about restricted gifts and the care with which they must be handled. You won't want to miss this webinar. We also have a companion booklet titled Charitable Giving Guide for Restricted Gifts, available free to all ECFA members and for $9.95 to all other churches. It is available in hard copy, on iTunes and Kindle by clicking on Books and eBooks from the resources page on ecfa.church. Some of the popular questions that Michael and Dan covered on restricted gifts are just few of the many that are answered in this great resource. Have you been considering ECFA membership for your church? Visit the Join ECFA tab at ecfa.church or get started by subscribing free to Church Excel, ECFA's new resource platform to help run the business side of your church with integrity and excellence. You can sign up today at churchexcel.org. Dan and Michael, I'll hand it back to you to finish us up.
Thanks so much, Tracy. I know that the resources that you mentioned are really outstanding and will be a huge blessing to all of the churches that are listening today. We're so proud of the growing number of churches that have taken a stand for integrity by joining as ECFA members. We've talked about it today, but the ECFA seal is a great way to demonstrate your commitment to high standards of integrity, like the area of honoring giver intent. We're also so thrilled, Tracy, like you mentioned, to offer a great selection of free resources to all churches through the Church Excel subscription at churchexcel.org. Please also don't forget to subscribe to our Excellence in Church Administration podcast on iTunes and send the podcast link to a friend or share on social media. And of course, if you have topic ideas or questions you'd like answered in future episodes of the podcast, it's as easy as emailing podcast@ecfa.org. And we truly do love hearing from you. So Dan, as we close out the podcast today, what encouragement can you share with our listeners from Scripture?
Well, yes, it'll be my pleasure, Michael. We know Scripture is full of reminders about the importance of integrity and being faithful to your word. To me, the whole area of restricted gifts really boils down to, are we being faithful stewards of our resources, and are we honoring our word and the promises we've made to those who've given generously to support the ministry? Numbers 30, verse 2 says, "When a man makes a vow to the Lord or takes an oath to obligate himself by a pledge, he must not break his word, but must do everything he said." Or in Psalm 89:34, "I will not violate my covenant or alter what my lips have uttered." And finally, Proverbs 20:25, "It is a trap to dedicate something rashly and only later to consider one's vows." From start to finish, we should be very careful in how we communicate with donors about giving opportunities. And as churches, we should be setting the highest example of what it means to be full of integrity and remaining faithful to our promises. When we do, we continually enhance trust with our givers and allow God the opportunity to entrust us with more. That's our brief word of encouragement for today, and I hope this conversation on restricted gifts and the tips we've shared have been helpful to you. Thanks again for investing your time with us and being intentional about growing in the level of excellence of your church administration. Until next time, if there's anything we can do to help you or your church, don't hesitate to reach out or visit our website, ecfa.church.